So, welcome back to LSHTM Viral Season 2, and I'd like to introduce the podcast team. So first we have Naomi. Naomi, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm a strategic communications manager here at LSHTM. And we also have Carl.
Hi everyone, I'm Carl Byrne, and I'm the public engagement manager at LSHTM.
And I'm Amy Thomas, and I'm the communications officer at LSHTM, and I primarily work on the Centre for Climate Change and Planetary Health. So yeah, this is the podcast team, and we will be guiding you through this season. But we'd like to give you a bit of background on the first season, because we think it'd be useful to reflect on that. So season one was primarily about COVID, and we got that together in a relatively short space of time. It was in response to the outbreak, so it was in much more of a reactive series. The series that we're planning now, which we hope you are excited about, is all about planetary health, and we've got some great topics to look forward to.
Well, I'm just going to say I'd never worked on a podcast before season one. I'd stayed far away from the land. So it's pretty cool that we managed to put it together in 48 hours and bring 39 episodes from the beginning of January on, following our scientists through coronavirus.
You're just building up expectations now that this is going to be a brilliant season.
It will be a brilliant season. And we are also doing this from our living rooms, although Carl's currently on the Starship Enterprise, according
yes,
to
I'm currently on the bridge of the NCC 1701D. Not that I'm a nerd. But.
And I'm currently in between my washing. But I actually think that's good sound padding, so maybe I'm actually winning on that front.
So Amy and Naomi, I've got a question for you. What were your highlights from season one? Was there anything you found out that you'd never heard of before? Was there anything surprising that came out of it?
I'd never heard of most of it. I mean, I guess the scientists hadn't heard of most of it too, since it was all new. It was pretty cool to follow the science as it was developing and listen to our epidemiologists and our modelers as they uncovered the science, getting a chance to talk to them directly.
Yeah, yeah. I think definitely for me, a highlight was being able to talk to people in Africa and in different countries, because obviously we were doing it remotely. There was no limitations on who we were talking to. So I had some great conversations with our colleagues in the Gambia and the MRC unit, and it was really cool to hear about the work that they're doing over there on COVID, and sort of as things were evolving, it was really interesting to hear how it was being handled over there. So that was definitely a highlight for me.
What did you like, Carol? What was your highlight?
I think that the highlight was just seeing how COVID-19 pandemic has affected so many different areas of the research that goes on in LSHTM and touched so many areas of people's lives. Like one thing that I hadn't really thought of before was the stuff that's going on with the medical detection dogs, teaching them how to sniff out COVID, which I think everyone will probably have seen in the papers and on the news recently. But we were sort of there at the very beginning whenever it was still in the planning stages. And it's just great seeing that move forward.
And the study is still ongoing. So if you'd like to wear some socks for science and help the dogs learn how to smell COVID, you can go to our website and check that out. So I guess we should talk a bit about planetary health and why we're doing a season and why we've shifted gears from coronavirus to the Earth.
Yeah, I suppose the first thing to tell people is, what is planetary health?
That's right.
Is the term, yeah. I think the term planetary health is something that a lot of people may not have come across before, so I think maybe that's a good starting point.
That's true. And we are going to get to deep dive through it in this first episode. But Amy, you work on the Center for Planetary Health, so.
I'm just going to pull up the official definition, because the official definition of planetary health is the health of human civilization and the state of the natural systems on which it depends. So it's interesting, because I asked a friend actually about planetary health, what they thought it meant, because they'd never heard of it. And they immediately said, oh, the health of the planet. So they were thinking much more in terms of nature rather than the human health side. But the whole point of planetary health is that it's the field looking at how our interactions with nature influence our own health. So it's much more of like a circular definition.
Yeah, I think you covered it well with that definition. It really is just showing that everything we do is linked with the planet as a whole. We can't just separate ourselves and go, oh, we're living on this planet. We're a part of the planet as well. We're part of the whole ecosystem, and things that we do will affect the planet, will affect the climate, and then that in turn will affect how our lives continue, either in a good way or a bad way. And I think as well with the COVID-19, it's obvious now that the further advances we make in air travel, making the world a much smaller place where you can get anywhere in the world within, 9 or 10 hours, it means that whenever these emerging diseases do appear, they can transfer across the world at lightning speed. And as we encroach into areas that have been untapped, say burning down the rainforests or moving into areas where there hasn't been much human influence as yet, that's when we're going to get more of these emerging viruses appearing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we've seen with COVID-19, the way it spread in weeks, months around the entire world.
It's interesting. So my background's virology, and I did my degree many, many years ago, but like this is back in the early 2000s, talking to virologists then, where they were going, it's not a matter of if another epidemic happens or if an emerging virus comes, it's going to be very, very deadly. It's a matter of when. And there's been a few little blips in the past, but this is sort of the first one that's, I think, affected everyone around the world in at least the last 20 years.
And I think, hopefully in this season, we've got some great researchers who work within the Centre for Climate Change and Planetary Health, who are looking at how exactly our influences on the environment are changing these patterns of disease, and whether that's changing temperatures or rainfall patterns or changes in land use. It all has an impact in how these diseases are spreading, and hopefully we'll be able to sort of explain that in more detail as we go through the season.
And it's interesting that you come from a virology background, Carl, because I come from an environmental science background. So for me, what's really cool about planetary health is integrating the health of the human within climate change. And that's something that's starting to come to light with all the different conventions and organizations looking into this, but it's not been in many previous discussions. So I worked with the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification, and it was not something that's been majorly considered before. So I think LSHTM is really well placed to bring this very important aspect of climate change into the discussions and into the policy agendas and how we approach this. And for me, that actually makes it a bit easier, because then it's about how it's affecting the individual, how it's affecting the actual person, the people experiencing it.
Just me being an idiot. Desertification, that's what, viable fertile land becoming desert.
Yeah, so it's increasing aridity, loss of nutrients, soil, the whole shebang. So that covers deforestation, salinity, everything. So there's the three conventions. So the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. I can't even say it. And that's the big one. That's the one everybody knows. That's the Paris Agreement, the 1.5. But there's two sister conventions. So there's the Convention on Biodiversity and on Land Degradation. And those were all born in 1992 in Rio at the same time. But climate change has become the big, bulky beast we need to tackle in its own right.
Just going back to your point, Naomi, about the idea of talking about health in the discussions around climate change, and that's something that is happening more, but still perhaps needs some more work. Boris Johnson gave a speech last week at the UN Climate Action Roundtable, and sort of calling for leaders and calling for action on climate change, but didn't mention health. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done to join up these two narratives. And I suppose that kind of comes back to the planetary health term, which is we can't just look at this as a singular, this is climate change and this is the planet and biodiversity. It's how our health is incorporated into that is essential for us to kind of move forward with climate action.
I know this is a really important topic to be covering. I'm not sure if we mentioned this at the start, so stop me if we have done, but there's a reason why we're doing this is the second season of LSHTM. It's because one of our centres in the school is, our newest centre is the Centre for Planetary Health.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned at the beginning, I work as communications officer and I work with the Centre on Climate Change and Planetary Health. So if you don't know, that there are different centres within the school that sort of focus on different topic areas and bring together researchers from different disciplines kind of under the same branch or sort of broad field. And it is the newest centre, and I think there's a big excitement and sort of strategic emphasis on the centre at the moment.
Yeah, and for me it fits nicely in that we created the podcast in response to this. Everybody wants to know about science. It's still new. It's still coming. But at the end of the day, in the back of the room is the giant elephant, which is climate change and planetary health. And coronavirus is part and parcel of that. But we really want to focus on this really big issue that's going to take all of our collective efforts, like coronavirus, but for a much longer time period and more concerted and more sincere. And we have something really cool to contribute to that. So I'm looking forward to it.
And also, you know, this, even though there's been a lot of work and discussions and a lot of the news agenda has been focused on COVID, and obviously this is an immediate crisis and threat that we are facing, it is a good time to be talking about climate change, because we are more attuned to health and public health than I suppose we ever have been. And it's the perfect time to be trying to, I guess, inspire action to benefit us for the future.
Yeah, and as well as inspiring action, it's also just highlighting some of the areas that people may not have thought of that are affected by this.
I was going to ask you guys, what question, if you had one question to pose to the experts about planetary health, what would you ask them?
I suppose my question, it may not be the cheeriest question, but do we still have time to save the world?
Let's save that one for the experts. I'm not going to share my opinion.
Yeah, I think I would, my burning question, which I always ask to researchers, is a question they don't want to answer because it doesn't really have an answer, is, are we hopeful? Are we hopeful for the future? I think it's probably looking for some reassurance there with my own anxieties about the climate. But I think there's lots of interesting questions that hopefully we will explore.
So I'll round it off with my question would be, and I think I'll cover this in one of the episodes on communicating around climate change and policy and planetary health, but what do we actually need to do, and how long do we have to do it? I mean, just how do we get there? How do we get ourselves to a place where this is no longer a doom and gloom scenario?
That's a much more constructive question than mine.
I was about to go off the cliff with my cynicism, so I'm going to stop there.
So we hope you are as excited as us for the season, and we will be kicking off the season with an episode on why climate change is a health issue.
And obviously you probably don't just want to hear our questions, so if they've got any burning questions about planetary health, climate change, or how the world is going to look in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, please do drop us a line. You can send an email to comms@lshtm.ac.uk. That's comms@lshtm.ac.uk.
So until then, stay safe and informed.
The term planetary health has been around for a few years.
This is Sir Andy Haynes. Andy started his career as a family doctor and was also a professor of primary healthcare at UCL. In 2001, Andy was appointed director of LSHTM and was knighted for services to medicine in 2005. These days, Andy is an active researcher in planetary health, studying how the environment influences our health and the co-benefits of a low-carbon economy.
It's partly in relation to a commission that I chaired that Richard Horton, the editor of The Lancet, invited me to chair some years ago. And it was him that coined, or at least popularized, the term planetary health. That was what the commission was entitled. In conventional public health or global health, we focus very much on the health of humanity without considering the broader environmental trends within which human society is operating. And the term planetary health really acknowledges that we're now in the midst of undergoing really a very rapid change in the global environment, which is related to human activities. So over the last 100 years or so, of course, we've seen a dramatic transformation of society in many ways. Human health has improved since the middle of the last century. Life expectancy has improved by over 20 years, for example. But that's come at a cost, and the cost has been borne by natural systems. And what we're seeing now is a range of different signs that we've exceeded the capacity of many of the systems of the planet. to sustain our society in the way it's currently sustained. So climate change is the obvious one, and that's caused by the accumulation of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, methane, and others in the atmosphere, and it's causing heating of the atmosphere. But there are other trends as well. This concept of planetary boundaries was developed by Stefan Rockström and colleagues, and they proposed that there were finite boundaries within which human society could flourish. The climate being one of them, but others as well, like biodiversity, pollution, the ingress of nitrogen and phosphorus into natural systems, depletion of fresh water, the decline of the marine environment, and so on. So in order to flourish, human civilization needs to stay within these planetary boundaries. And if we don't do that, then that's going to have effects on health. So there's a real danger that the potential for current and future generations to enjoy good health is being undermined by these environmental changes.
And do you think the term planetary health will help us shape new narratives around climate change and some of the health impacts that you mentioned?
Well, no single term can sort of embrace all the complexity of meaning, of course. And when I first heard the term planetary health, I had mixed feelings about it. I thought on the one hand, it sounded kind of grandiose, and also there was a danger that it might say to people that this everything's happening at a planetary level. There's nothing you can do as an individual citizen or, as a member of an institution or of a company or of a nation. And I think that's not true. Of course, we all have responsibilities and things that we can do to influence this broader concept of planetary health. But overall, I think it is a helpful concept, and it makes us have the discussion that we're having today, for example. It does challenge the very narrow focus of conventional public health, which doesn't take into account these constraints on the development of human societies and civilization. And I think it does reinforce the interdependence that we as humans have on natural systems, which has largely been forgotten because we've exploited those systems in order to grow food, to generate economic growth, to generate energy, and so on. So I think it is a helpful reminder that we live on a relatively small planet. There are well over 7 billion of us, getting up to 8 billion, and we need to radically change our way of living if we're going to sustain our prospects for health and development over coming decades.
The term planetary health can feel quite daunting sometimes because there are so many moving parts and everything's interconnected. How do you advise that we kind of help conceptualize the idea or talk about it in simple terms?
Well, I think we can go back to some of the more traditional concepts. Indeed, many indigenous societies have this concept of living in harmony with nature, of respecting nature's bounty, what nature offers to keep their societies going. We've lost that vision in our society because it's been based on the exploitation of, and over-exploitation of these systems. So we've lost that balance, and I think it's worth thinking about how we can begin to return to that and embrace these concepts within our broader kind of conceptual thinking. One of the issues is that we don't really value nature in an economic term. So if we exploit nature, we cut down timber or we pump greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, our economy is not really based on paying the full economic cost of that. We focus very much as a society on economic growth. And of course, economic growth is needed, particularly if you're poor populations, that they need economic growth. But a kind of exclusive focus on GDP, gross domestic product, as the main purpose of the kind of political life is very misguided.
You mentioned there the sort of societal focus on economic growth and GDP, etc. How has health traditionally been incorporated in these kind of discussions, and how do you envisage planetary health kind of being involved in these discussions going forward?
Well, I think traditionally, of course, health is that there's an assumption that health will improve as GDP increases. And, very broadly that is true, obviously, in general. Richer nations have better health than poorer nations, but it's not invariably so. And, of course, the other problem with GDP is it doesn't tell you how income is distributed in society. So there's a profound issue of socioeconomic inequalities, obviously, and that's driven a lot of conventional public health. but it hasn't been integrated until very recently with these broader considerations of how do we achieve more equitable health within the planetary boundaries that I've mentioned. So I think that this kind of paradigm does offer quite profound changes. And I suppose at this stage, we don't have precise answers to all the questions. But I think one key issue is that we need to put health and well-being at the center of economies. So it's really about achieving equitable health and well-being. And it's interesting to note that a number of governments are beginning to move in that direction. So, for example, New Zealand is creating this concept of the sort of well-being economy, which looks much more broadly than just GDP at what kind of metrics might be useful indicators of human progress. So we need to look critically at what possible indicators we could use. Human health, various well-being indicators are obviously one component of that, but also these indicators that tell us whether or not we're living sustainably. So greenhouse gas emissions, freshwater exploitation, and data relevant to these other planetary boundaries that I mentioned.
You mentioned, obviously, there's some answers that we don't know at this point, which is probably true for a lot of areas of science. Do you think the health impacts from climate change and the field of planetary health is well understood by policymakers and governments, or is there a lot of work needed to help us understand at least the concept and the idea before that?
Yes, I mean, it's quite striking that the whole field of environmental change and human health has been really underfunded, grotesquely underfunded, I would say, you know, in comparison to the very large sums spent on biomedicine, and of course, you know, welcome biomedical research. And for much of my career, I've been involved in health systems, healthcare, public health research. But it's been very striking that there's been a tremendous underinvestment in trying to explore these complex issues of the interrelationships between natural systems, the global environment, and human health. And that really has to change rapidly. But increasingly, of course, we need to focus on solutions. Even if we don't fully understand all the ways in which environmental change will roll out over coming decades, and of course, the impact and the magnitude of that is still to some extent within our control, because the decisions that we make over coming years and decades will shape the future of the health of humanity and the future of human civilization. So there's still a lot that we can do, but we need to act quickly.
I've got a question, which is a bit more personal, but you know, you've obviously had a very extraordinary career. You started as a medic, later appointed as director of LSHTM, and now you work very closely with the Centre on Climate Change and Planetary Health. I'm interested to know, when did you become interested in the health impacts of climate change? Was it something that developed gradually over your career, or was there a particular moment when you thought, okay, this is really what I want to be doing?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because as you say, I was a practicing family physician, a general practitioner for many years, as well as being an academic. And a lot of my research was more on the kind of healthcare, health systems, healthcare delivery, so epidemiology, in more conventional sense of the word. But it was really probably in the very late 80s, about 1988, 89, I started to hear this term global warming, climate change. And it just seemed to me that alarm bells started ringing, and I started thinking this must have implications for human health, but no one seemed to be writing about it. So I started to think about this. I came across a few rather obscure papers about changes in tropical disease distribution and so on, but there was hardly anything written. And I think I wrote an editorial, this was in 1991, actually, in the BMJ, where I said, I tried to draw together what I could see was happening or might happen with climate change and health. And I said that I thought if climate change wasn't addressed, there could be potentially catastrophic implications for human health. And subsequent to that, and another few papers that I wrote, a couple of people then contacted me. One of those was Tony McMichael. Tony was really a fantastic scientist, great environmental epidemiologist. And of course, he and I collaborated for many years on and off, and he came to the London School, actually before I arrived to the London School. He's one of the people that actually persuaded me to come to the school from UCL. He came to the school where he developed his thinking around climate change and human health. And in fact, in 1993, Tony wrote an extraordinarily prescient book called Planetary Overload, which is well worth reading today, because he foresaw most of these planetary changes that we're now experiencing and said that they would influence human health. But for many years, I tried to juggle a career in medicine, research, and you know, running academic departments and so on. And when I came to the school, of course, I had the responsibility of running the school, but I was also able to see the diversity of work going on across the school. And it seemed to me that much of it really could illuminate some of these challenges that we needed to understand much better around what we now call, of course, planetary health. So although I didn't have much time as director, I was able to convene some work to colleagues around the school. We did a series in The Lancet in 2009, which again was already focusing on solutions, what might be the health benefits of the low carbon economy. So the school has been a wonderful environment in which to develop some of these ideas, particularly because we have so many outstanding scientists with different disciplines. And as I've said, planetary health is par excellence a transdisciplinary endeavor. You have to work with people from different disciplines and you have to understand the language of different disciplines. And I think that's one of the things that's very much appealed to me and attracted me to working in this area, and also to staying at the London School to develop these concepts further with many outstanding colleagues here.
That's really interesting to hear, actually, Andy, a bit of a story there about how you've sort of ended up where you are. And I've got sort of one final question just to finish the discussion, which is sort of related to what we were just talking about, but what's your favourite thing about working in planetary health?
I think it's the opportunity to talk to and engage with people from such diverse backgrounds, really. So, you know, I'm working with everyone from sort of anthropologists to climatologists. It's a fantastic learning experience. You have to be humble because no single individual can encompass all the knowledge that you need in order to understand some of the issues and the potential solutions for these challenges of planetary health and climate change. But it is a very enriching experience if you go into it as a learning experience and trying to understand these complex interrelationships, not just between human health and natural systems, but also between different sectors in society, different perspectives, the challenges of how we change human behavior and so on. So I think when you put all that together, it's a very rich mixture of different disciplinary perspectives that I think can help to really illuminate some of the solutions. There's also, as you said, there's a real feeling of excitement. And everyone is very, very motivated because I think all of us in this broad and expanding field realize that humanity really is facing some major challenges. And it's us, at this particular point in history, that have the responsibility to stand up and try to address those challenges. So it is quite time urgent. It is very intellectually very exciting. It attracts a lot of very able and open-minded people. It gives you the opportunity to work virtually often these days with colleagues around the world, because planetary health obviously spans geographical boundaries. So there's a growing and very impressive international community that's working in this area. And very excitingly, I think it enables us to talk to people in other settings, in other sectors, about the importance of human health and how it depends on these natural systems. So I'm finding a lot of receptivity to these ideas in fields far away from the conventional public health fields. And I think that's really an exciting opportunity to have an influence on the wider policy stage. So national, international leaders, people leading city administrations, leaders of different businesses and sectors, there's a great openness, I think, to some of these ideas, and a feeling that we have to look for potential solutions and not just be bogged down and frightened by the magnitude of the threats coming at us, but also think clearly about how we can minimise the risk to humanity.
That's great. Thanks so much, Andy. And yeah, I absolutely agree. I talk to people working in planetary health pretty much every day, and it's inspiring to hear the motivations and the kind of that feeling that we want to sort of make change and find solutions that work, even though it's quite an intense field to work in because there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed. But there can be a lot of negativity around some of these discussions, but it's important to remember that there's a lot of inspiring people there, and that there is positivity as well to talk about.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, the perception that future is sort of catastrophic can also be paralyzing, and you know, it doesn't necessarily motivate change. You actually need to present people with feasible options and opportunities, and really engage people on that in that way. I think one of the very heartening things about Planetary Health is just the number of early career, younger researchers who are coming up through this field, who are rapidly becoming expert across a range of different disciplines, or at least aware of the contribution of different disciplines. So when I was trained, you know, we were in very, very narrow silos. And I remember a very senior professor saying to me, well, if you want to succeed, you've got to focus, focus, focus. And I thought to myself, I'm not sure that's actually correct. And I don't going to do that. Because what I think you also do is need to do is to have, as well as you have to have some, obviously, deep knowledge of specific areas, but you also have to have a broader general knowledge of how this all comes together, how these systems all kind of interrelate, interdigitate between each other. Yeah. Very encouraging to see a whole new generation of younger researchers coming up through this field, focusing on different aspects of it, but also keeping the bigger picture in mind. And that gives me a great deal of optimism for the future.
Fantastic. And that kind of circles back to the first discussions we had, which is, you know, the term planetary health is a very inclusive term trying to link together these different aspects. So that's a very nice positive note to end the discussion on, I think. Thank you so much for the chat, Andy. That was really great. And, you know, I hope people will be really looking forward to the episodes to come, you know, exploring, you know, the research within the centre and externally as well. So, yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy.